CPRN, the comprehensive news source for the world's progressive community. We're moving forward, and we hope you're coming with us.
That's Jamaica's Monty Alexander on piano, introducing Bob Marley's Running Away. It's from his 1999 album, Stir It Up, the music of Bob Marley. Apart from Monty, and I'm partial, of course, I must confess, to Steve Torre's trombone, which joins Dwight Dawes on keyboards, Robert Angus and Derek DiCenzo on guitar, Trevor McKenzie and Glenn Bourne and Hassan J.J. Wiggins on bass, Sly Dunbar, Rolando Wilson, and Troy Davis on drums, and Desmond Jones on percussion. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. And the question today, where the heck are we? Just when we thought all hell did break loose in the presidential election, we discover continuing waves of political mayhem, mischief, and insanity, reminding us that the end is nowhere in sight. We dare not even hope that Election Day will bring it all to an end. We know it will be like the BCAD division of time, a dramatic new beginning, whichever way it goes. But what kind of beginning? So, as we do at least once a month, we take our political pulse, we check our pulse to see how things are going, and we are focusing on the extraordinary developments in election 2016, more so to measure, I think, our recognition of how the political landscape is changing and our attitudes and choices along with it. Lots of things are happening, and they're happening at a feverish pace because, well, the election itself, the presidential election itself, is reaching its due date of Election Day. So in this short period of time, we'll have a burst of activity and all kinds of craziness happening. But that is expected. That is to be expected. What we want to do, though, is operate with that as a given. The craziness will be part of the landscape. What we ought to be doing is trying to figure out just what this whole thing has brought us to in terms of a recognition of the political system, what we are supposed to be doing with it or in it, if at all, how it relates to us and our interests, how do we utilize this moment to begin again? You know, there's something that needs to be said about this process of beginning over and over and over again. It is frustrating, and it is it's very depressing in some ways, but it is life. This is what happens all the time. Things cause other things to happen, and you have to adjust. You have to make adjustments to them. Now, but the most significant development, as we've been talking about, has been these movements that have begun to reach a point of significant mass. They're gathering steam and momentum, and with that, you have recognition of a reality. People are beginning to really hook into the reality of things, how the system works, where they fit within it, the extent to which they have the power to make any adjustment, you know, either to the system or to themselves. But they're getting it. And so we can't be hopeless and give up. This is just life. Sometimes you start over and over and over and over again, and it seems as if that's what life is. You're just starting over every day. It's a new beginning. But that comes with the territory, because we are human beings full of foibles and flaws, full of mischief, full of all kinds of dark things. And sometimes we forget, you know, the saying, wherever you go, there you are. You don't just become high-minded because you're with high-minded people. I mean, we look at Hillary Clinton and we see that no amount of outside influence has changed what essentially is a dark nature given to shady, unethical behavior and conduct. So you bring yourself to whatever it is you do. This is the moment we're in. And we could use this moment to get a hold of ourselves as political people. Are we understanding our relationship to the system? Do we understand the system a little bit better? Do we make different kinds of choices? And if so, what would those choices be? Do you get a sense of being more empowered because you know more? Or do you get a sense of being overwhelmed by the enormity of the task of dealing with a system so well organized against you? I see many good things happening and very many troubling things happening. But the most important thing is to try as hard as you can to arrive at a point of clarity about the moment you're in. So this is our conversation today. Just where are we? And where do you think we ought to go? What are the choices you think that confront us? It's the same question we've been talking about. But we haven't asked this question, and we haven't explored the answers to this question often enough, it seems to me, across the board. We get told what the answers are. And I think it is far more refreshing, far more valuable, far more instructive to elicit the ideas, to encourage an introspection so that people themselves, they guide themselves through the problem and to the answer. So, with that in mind, we're going to be talking a lot today. 888-874-4888. Many things are happening. We see the Republican Party recoiling and just can't believe itself that it actually did have, and it does have, a renegade on its hands. I mean, they're acting like this. This is surprising. The Democratic Party, on the other hand, is in deep denial that this person who is the sanctified, anointed one, who must be president at all costs, there's a mismatch going on here. There's a mismatch. And it's the same on both sides. We have a kind of unanimity of agreement here. We have Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump being particularly odious and offensive as choices, as political choices for leadership of this country. And people often are citing the same reasons. They have no conscience. They are just absolutely obsessed with their own power. They lie. They distort the truth. They do anything to win. And we've seen that. Except that we're getting all these people who one thinks, I mean, they have some brains. They have a reasonable brain. They're smart people. But they refuse to see what is in front of them. They refuse to acknowledge it. And their view of the world is, well, look, we have to have somebody in office. And I can't stand Trump, so I'll go with Hillary. I mean, is that the level at which we're making decisions now? And in service of that, to utterly and completely deny all of this evidence that should tell you, bells should be ringing 24/7 in your head, that these are really profoundly unsuitable people. But we have a massive denial going on here. And they won't let it go. They're telling us we are the ones who are crazy because we're not pragmatic. I mean, Bernie Sanders actually said to the people who had supported this effort to carve a new path, a new political path, he said, look, you have to deal with political reality. And this is political reality. She has won. All of a sudden, he dismisses the idea that it is not so much that she has won, it's also how she has won. We have all these reports of voting irregularities and fraud. He knows it. But yet he was able to convince himself that it was the right thing to do, to be pragmatic, because in the end, somebody is going to be president. So get over the emotion attached to this high-minded ideal about an ethical leadership and deal with the fact that in as much as there's going to be a leader, let's get behind a leader. You can close your eyes and hold your nose, but we got to pick one. So I'm picking her, and I'm encouraging you to do the same. This is the political philosophy now. The philosophy of let's do whatever it is that we need to do. We will rationalize it and justify it as a name of political pragmatism, practicality. And we move on. We'll take care of the other business very soon in the future. But for right now, this is where we're at, and we have to make a tough choice. You can have your high-minded ideals, but in any event, a decision will be made about a president, and you either are part of it or you're not. If you're not, you will also suffer the consequences of that. But we can at least convince ourselves that we're choosing the lesser of two evils. She is not the best person, but she is better than the other guy. I mean, this is where we are. This is what has come of these high-minded, very ethically based political struggles. So your thoughts at 888-874-4888. Where are we? Where are you in this scheme of things? Are you changing? Are you sensing a transformation, your own political transformation? Are you having revelations of one sort or another? If so, what are they? And how are they situating you to be a self-guided political missile? You're there, you are aware, you have clarity, and you're understanding more and more, not only the system, but your relationship to it. This is the development of a political mind. And it, of course, will inform your political action. But this is the moment. So let's talk. We'll take this short break and come back to your calls and discussions at 888-874-4888. Listening to Lead Stories on PRN.FM, we're getting a bit philosophical and introspective today. We're asking ourselves, just where are we in the scheme of things? Of course, within the context of the ongoing madness that is called the 2016 presidential election. But what is it teaching you? What are you getting out of this in your own personal world about the structure of politics, how you are navigating the structure of politics? What are you learning from this experience? Your calls at 888-874-4888. We start off with Courtney. Hello, Courtney.
Hello?
Hello, hello? You're on the air.
Yes, how you doing? It's Patrice?
Fine, thank you. Fine, thank you. How are you?
Yeah. All right, this is Kwame, not Courtney. He had the wrong name.
Kwame. This is Kwame, sorry.
How you doing, sister? All right. It's a lot that I'm learning, but it's just a shame that we really have come to this, that that so-called American democracy comes down to, you know, as you were stating, choosing, we know she's bad. We know she's bad, but she's not as worse as the other guy. But when we look at her record, what makes him so bad than her? Now, I was on Facebook the other day ago having a conversation with some diehard Democrats, and they kept on telling us that one of the things they were pointing out is that we have to save America from Donald Trump's fascism and all the laws that he, if he becomes president, Right? So my question posed to these people, you know, well, how about, let's talk about the crimes of the Clinton family. Regardless of Donald Trump, his corruption in Atlantic City, you know, his bad business, Donald Trump is not responsible for a million people dying in Iraq, people being born with, you know, deformities, cancer, you know, due to the ordering of, you know, when Clinton was the president, he kept on bombing. He said that he used to bomb Iraq every 3 days, by some reports. But, you know, when I gave them the list of the crimes of Clinton, you know, they still want to bypass that. It doesn't matter what the Clintons have done. It doesn't matter about the crime bill or anything like that. It's all about getting Hillary Clinton elected.
So, Kwame, at this point, how would you describe yourself as a political person? What is your ideology? What is your orientation now? And what formed it?
I would describe myself as one who is a resistor, who resists the empire or the power structure, and also the so-called status quo. You know, that's why I would describe myself.
Is there anything in particular in this election cycle that either underscored your self-definition as a resistor, or did something else happen that you came to this conclusion?
Oh, no. I was raised in the conclusion before this election.
Okay.
Yeah, I would say. Definitely. Yeah. Definitely. Can I make a Muslim in America, can I make a, is it all right, a comment? Can I comment on something real quick?
Absolutely.
I'm having a problem with this. They have this, they're promoting this guy, Khurshid Khan. His son was killed in Iraq in 2004. And, you know, the Democratic Party and the media is just using this guy. And he's willing to be used. But the truth of the matter is that his son was never supposed to be in that war. And according to Islamic law, we can't even give his son a burial. You know, what they're doing is the Democrats don't care. Obviously, the father, being that he's such assimilationist, he don't care that the truth be done. Because we're not supposed to join imperialist armies. And also armies that are out to basically harm Islam. So this is the ruling of fatwa. You know, from Islamic law, but, you know, it's another distortion that's going on. I mean, we just got finished celebrating Muhammad Ali. You know, Muhammad Ali being resistant to the Vietnam War. I mean, even though he wasn't a Muslim yet, because he was in the Nation of Islam, was a pseudo group. But the point is, what he did was right. Under Islam, that was right. He wasn't supposed to join, you know, into the Vietnam War and go on to an adventure. But these people, they don't care. They know they're using this guy. And, that's one of the things I did point out to these people, too. I mean, really, the Democratic Party is really friends of the Muslim community now. I mean, all the infiltration they have done in masjids, voted on by the Democrats, all the bombing the Muslim lands, voted on by the Democrats. They're really friends. You know, they really love this guy, you know, this assimilationist guy. Here.
Very interesting. Very interesting. Thank you so much for getting us started today, Kwame.
Thank you. Keep up the good work. All right. Thank you.
You too. Thank you. Let's go to Michigan. Leona, you're on the air.
Greetings, Yatrice, and greetings to the PRN audience, your audience.
Thank you so very much for that.
Yes, ma'am. You know, in light of yesterday being the birthday of James Baldwin, he would have been 92 had he lived, I have a quote that I'd like to share regarding what he said about the lesser of two evils. It's brief. He says that most of us have arrived at a point where we still believe and insist on and act on the principle, which is no longer valid, that this is such and such an optimal choice is the lesser of two evils. And that is no longer true. Gonorrhea is not preferable to syphilis. James Baldwin.
Okay. Now, tell us why you quoted that piece of scripture.
Well, I think it's apropos. I think it speaks to this presidential race, 2016, to a degree. And I also think that it kind of nails home the point. You know, the lesser of two evils is still pretty evil.
Yes.
Moreover, yesterday was primary election day in the state of Michigan, and I submitted my ballot, and I did not vote Republican or Democrat. I just stuck with the nonpartisan issues, and even they lost. The way I voted didn't win with that. I'm a little depressed, I guess you could say, right now about this election cycle. In Detroit, in fact, there's a woman, Detroit City Clerk, her name is Janice Winfrey. She's also running for office against John Conyers. This woman oversees the elections in Detroit. She's on the ballot, and yet I don't know if there's any law prohibiting her from doing what she's done. She oversees the election, and she's a candidate on the ballot. So I in terms of my political ideology, what have you, I right now at this stage of my life, I identify as a victim of the system of racism, white supremacy. And in terms of organizations, I'm playing with the idea of being my own organization, meaning I guess just that. You know, I figure if I could get my thinking, thought, speech, and action in order, I might be able to help somebody else, I guess, and help myself, you know, family, friends, community, that kind of thing. I don't know if I'm off topic today, but...
No, you're right on point. This is the whole point of the discussion today. You're coming to terms with your own definition of your political orientation. What is it that you're learning from the cycle? What is it that is informing your political decisions? And you're telling us. That's great.
Oh, yes, ma'am. And I want to take this moment to thank you so much for all you are doing and have done to help our people and to help all people. And I'm trying to learn about this media, you know, how this media thing works. I saw one of your talks on YouTube that I watched back in, you know, from back in the day, and were you trying to explain
that
how
was
to...
back in the day.
Yes, ma'am. Were you, you know, trying to help people understand how this media thing operates? And I know you do it from time to time on your shows now, but I'm wondering, is there more, or I just roll with what you're offering now? Because I certainly appreciate it.
Yeah, we can do this. We just go with the flow. But media literacy is what I'm calling it.
Yes, ma'am.
It's really getting to understand the media as an extension of the system. You gotta. You can't just have your hack. You know, your armor down. You have to have your armor up. And you have to be a defensive consumer of education and of information, because this is how control is actually executed. It comes in the form of news reports, and you know, that in turn come with a lot of authority behind it. But it's actually designed to throw you off base.
Yes, ma'am. And you're right when you say it's a battle for the mind. Yes, ma'am. Indeed.
Yes, indeedy. Indeed, okay. It is a battle for the mind. But I'm happy to know that you are actively and consciously in this journey. And that's great. That's fantastic.
Yes, ma'am. Well, thank you for that encouragement. I'm glad. And may I add one last thing, if you don't mind? Now,
sure.
I'm studying the work of Neely Fuller Jr., and I believe it is important to work to eliminate this unjust system of white supremacy, racism, and replace it with a system of justice. And he defines justice as two things. One, guaranteeing that no one is mistreated. And two, guaranteeing that the person who needs help the most gets the most constructive help. I think those two, that definition is logical. I think it's a worthwhile thing to work for. I know that the system of racism, white supremacy is unjust. It's done harm. It's got to go. It's got to go. It's got to be replaced with justice. That's my belief at this point in my life. Yes, ma'am.
Thank you so much for your call today and for contributing so meaningfully to this discussion. We go to Oregon with Cheyenne. You're on the air.
Hi, how are you?
Fine, thank you. How are you?
I'm good. I've never called before. I've been listening to your show for, well, as long as I've been listening to PRN, which is just a few months. I just want to say when I first became a voter, I was a independent right from the beginning, and I was really involved in, like, local and national elections, but I didn't really get, I was never an activist. And then I just became apathetic, you know, through the 90s. And for a couple of decades, I've been so apathetic. And in this cycle, I really started, you know, I became aware of Bernie, and I decided that I wasn't going to be apathetic anymore. I liked what he was saying, but earlier this year, I actually met and spoke with, for several minutes, Jill Stein, and I felt like I had her platform really matched my values much more even than Bernie. And she told me this was going to happen, and I feel like everyone who knows anything about politics or has been following politics for a long time knew that this was going to happen. The end where Bernie said, you know, like that Hillary was going to get the nomination. She said that the Democrats were never going to let him, you know, get the nomination. I knew she was right, but I didn't feel like she was getting much traction, but I love her platform. And so what I found out about myself, I never really labeled myself, but I don't know if you know online, there's this like grid. It has like four quadrants, and you can, you know, answer these questions and find out where you are politically. Turns out I'm like sitting right at the bottom, almost off the chart, right next to like Noam Chomsky, just to give you an idea. And I didn't know, I never knew that about myself, but that is, and that's probably why I live here.
Well, at least you located yourself.
Yes,
that's
I
good.
Located myself. But here's a funny thing. This is also what I'm learning in this election, because before I just didn't pay attention. I actually have a law degree. I used to be, you know, I'm an educated, so-called, well, formally educated person, but ever since I've been listening to PRN, I feel like I know more about what's going on. What's really going on, you know, in our country, and I don't like it. I mean, I've been seeing what's going on for a while, but now I know the reasons I feel behind it. But in 2008, when Obama versus Hillary, I actually wanted Hillary to win because I know it. She was a woman, and I thought we needed a woman. And plus, I liked her. Of course, I didn't know anything about her, even having my education and all that. I really didn't look deeply. I didn't know. I mean, if you would have told me she was on the board of Walmart, that would have been enough for me. But I didn't know anything, and I was so disappointed that she didn't win. But I did not switch to be a Democrat to vote for her, which I did for Bernie against my better judgment. But I did vote for Bernie, and I actually met Bernie and shook his hand, too, and told him we love him. Well, yeah, we love you, Bernie. Thank you. And now I'm really disappointed. And I listened to you the other day, and you were saying how, I think you said it a couple of days, that, you know, we should, I forget the word you used, like disclaim Bernie and all that. And I thought, what would be the practical
way
of doing
it? Fire him.
Yeah. Well, the
fire
thing
the
is
leader.
That, you know, this movement, I feel, you know, he basically, he, you know, brought us together and single-handedly blew us apart, because where is the movement? The movement is scattered to the four winds, and who would speak on behalf of the movement? I mean, I was wondering if there's a practical way to actually do that, and I didn't think there was.
Yes,
but
there
I,
is.
I
and you see, the reason we're talking about these things this way is to also get people to understand that they are, in and of themselves, the power.
Yes.
You don't have to derive power from the leader, when in fact you have to come to the understanding that you are empowering the
yes.
leader.
Yes.
Everybody who, the 13 million votes, each represent an empowerment that comes from the person. It doesn't come from the leader. It comes from the
yes.
person.
Yes.
So this is the power you have. And
yes,
ought to get used to the idea that the power actually originates and rests with you.
Yes, yes. I feel it in my gut. I mean, when you first said it, I was kind of sitting here thinking, like, but I can feel it in my gut. There's no way I'm going to vote for Hillary. Of course I'm going to vote for Jill Stein. I actually told her in person that I was going to vote for her. But Hillary does not represent me. She does not speak for me. And now I'm not going to vote for Bernie to speak for me because he's telling me to vote for something that I wouldn't vote for. And then he wants to, you know, go into the Democratic Party and reform it. Well, I've always been a non-affiliated voter, so I could care less about that party. So everything you said, I really resonated with because I'm like, well, I don't care about that party. I don't want to reform it. I think that's a waste of energy. I'm not going to vote for Hillary. And I'm disappointed. I mean, I'm thankful to Bernie because I feel like he woke people up in a way, but I am not going to follow him. And I don't think we can unite behind him. And I know people, even if they don't want to say it, it's not going to happen. Those 13 million people are not going to join his new whatever organization. I don't think so. So I was wondering
Thing is, yes, you're disappointed. And that's okay to be disappointed because time and again, we go through the cycle of you make the make a judgment in all good faith and everything, and then people just turn it into crap. So this happens. But the main thing is, as long as you get closer and closer to an understanding that you are power, you have the power, and all the millions of people like you each have a portion of that power, and you have to protect the integrity of that. And if you do that, you're good.
Yes, I agree with you, but when I go online, Facebook or whatever, social media, people don't get that. They give their power away. That's what I see. And that's nothing new, but I'm seeing it a lot. And so I don't know what you do with that. People just giving their power away.
It takes a while for people to get to that point, but if you talk about it a bit more, if you really set out in a purposeful way to understand where you are in the scheme of things, how you are actually planned for by the power elite to fit into a nicely designed little cog. They could predict what you're going to do, and they got you down pat. Your job is really to look at this process as a constantly evolving thing that has to do with your concept of your place in the world, what you bring to it, the power that you choose to share with others in pursuit of an aggregate good or benefit. And that's what politics is at its best. But you also have to be ruthless and obsessive about your interest, in the sense that when parties and systems do you wrong, you have to let them know. You got to do it. Thanks so much, Cheyenne, for your call today.
Oh, you're welcome. Have a good day.
You too. Thank you so much. Paul from Maryland, you're on the air. Hi, Paul. Okay, so we lost Paul. Henry from Chicago.
Hey, Teresa, how's it going?
Okay, how's by you, as they say?
Everything's going good. This election cycle has brought me to the conclusion that, and looking in the past of the, past couple of election cycles, this brings me to the conclusion of the illusion of choice. As the mainstream media advertises, this election of being free choice, because if this is what we have to work with, I don't want it. I mean, honestly, choosing between Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump is like, who's the tallest midget? It's like, it doesn't matter.
Hey, don't insult midgets. But little people.
But I mean, that's the choice that we have, and it's like I'm to the point now where I still believe in the voting process. However, in my own protest, because I too don't know much about the third party candidate, so I'm just going to write my own name in there, and basically let the establishment know that I'm unhappy with the choices that you've given me. So,
getting close to, and this is where I sense people are also getting to that point, we have to establish, I don't know what you would call it, but civics class. You know, at some point, people have to understand how the system works.
Mm-hmm.
And what it means to exercise your power, and what it means to the power of the vote and all of that. We got to have some kind of formal way of introducing these things so that people don't just, you're voting, it means that on such and such a date, you show up and you pull a lever and then you, you know, get lost. No. We have to begin the process of grassroots education so that people understand how you leverage your power, how you vote, why you should vote, and why you should not vote, because that also is an option.
Yes, it is. And it's so weird that you say that, because most adults won't know. Like, I remember when I was in college, my second year of college, we had to fill out one of those charts, those political charts, where you fill out, you know, from where you live at, from the alderman all the way up to the president. And most of the people in my class couldn't even figure out who their aldermen were. So even during that time, it was kind of like, you know, nobody knew, you know, who was running who. And that's the first thing we should, like, educate at least the teenagers, who is running who in what district and what are they doing, you know. And also, too, Eutrice, you talk about the independent and revolutions that have taken place, you know, like, you know, with the failed revolution of Bernie Sanders and Barack Obama and Kucinich. But another one that you haven't mentioned was the one in 92 with Ross Perot. I mean, he had 18 million votes in a primary election. And he, unfortunately, you know, dismantled that revolution in itself, you know, because, he sold out in his own way. So it's like, you know, we have that all through history. And I always look at the Ross Perot one, because I think that could have made a huge impact of people, you know, slowly moving away from the Democratic and Republican parties during that time.
Well, Ross Perot was a kinder, gentler version of Donald Trump in a way. He was funding his own effort. Largely, he had the money, and he had a vision which was deeply rooted in conservatism, at least what they call conservatism. There are other names for it, but we'll call it conservatism from this point. But the issue with Ross Perot was just the same thing. He understood. He knew that there was a segment out there that had a palpable distrust of the system. They were fed up with politics as usual, and they wanted something different. And that's it. But he was not, his candidacy was not an inclusive candidacy, although he said he tried to appeal to as broad a spectrum as possible, but he was clear who he was talking to and who he was talking for.
Mm-hmm.
So Ross Perot, and a lot of it sounded like homespun common sense logic, right?
Mm-hmm.
But make no mistake, in all of that, you had the good old, quote, good old fashioned American values. And you know what that means. It's white supremacy.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
It looked neat. He had part in his hair, dressed well, and very conservative and very polite man and all of that stuff. But Ross Perot was not advocating a turning around so dramatic that people would dare even compare it to say, well, gee, this looks a little bit socialist, or this looks a little bit radical. No, he was very firmly planted in America's conservative values. And, well, there was a limit to that kind of appeal. And he found out.
Okay.
But I think your point is well taken. We really do need to have revitalize these kinds of discussions so people get to understand how the political system works and how it impacts on their daily lives. in education, in employment, and all these various ways. And how the system isn't there. Our experience with the system is it is targeted against us. We have to change that. The system is to serve us, and we are the ones with the power. This is very important for us to change in our own minds. The system isn't as powerful as we give it license to be. We have power, and we don't use it strategically. And in some cases, we don't use it at all.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to come to terms with our own, dereliction of duty here, and get to learn more about how the system works, so that we can navigate it more sensibly.
Yep.
Thanks, Henry. Good to hear from you.
Thank you.
Thank you. From New Jersey, Michael, you're on the air.
It's always a pleasure to talk with you and the PRN audience. Am I coming over?
Michael, are you there?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Okay. Well, then let's go to...
Hello.
Let's see. Lost him. I'm so sorry about that. Desiree from New York, you're on the air.
Hi. Okay. Hi. I wanted to say
yes.
Concerning...
You're speaking, so we're listening. Go ahead.
Okay. I wanted to say from last Friday's show that a lot of callers were saying, oh, I feel really, really upset. Bernie didn't win, and, we were talking about this lesser of two evils, and the caller that called before and said that beautiful quote. I think it all just comes back to what you were saying about clarity, about knowing what you want and knowing what your values were. I recently made contact with the New York for Bernie on Facebook, and I wanted to know how I could somehow do a rally or somehow a type of gathering of people to actually employ this idea that you had of firing Bernie and maybe putting it on the web or something like that.
Well,
and
you had said before, but Desiree, you had said before that you are not a political person.
I'm not a political person.
Okay. But what does that mean? Have you figured out why you think you're not a political person, or that being a political person is somehow very different from who and what you are right now?
I want to say I don't identify myself as a political person because I'm gravitating onto a type of movement, a type of revolution of my mind and my ideals and what I think should be done in this country. I've never voted. I didn't vote for Bernie, however great Jill Stein is. And I've heard what she fights for. I agree with it. I wouldn't vote for her I wouldn't vote anyway. But I think others should be aware that there are other choices. You don't have to pick the lesser of two evils. There are other choices out there. And if I were to speak on behalf of anybody, I would just speak on behalf of people. Just be.
Desiree, you were saying that, you never were a political person. Do you feel that you somehow are evolving or into a political person, or you have a political awareness since the last time we talked?
I hear your show, and I'm always inspired, and I feel like, I guess, if anything, your show has inspired me to be a transportive kind of calling to those who may not know, but that's all I really want to be. I guess I would just like to educate others on what I happen to have the fortune of being able to work and listen to you on a daily basis and what I get to hear and know. And I don't think that makes me any more political. I think I said before, if I had to say if I had a political standing, I think I'm an anarchist. And I think people should be able to govern themselves, and they can do the right thing. But we've just been so misled that I think as an idea right now, it's absolutely preposterous. But if people did something for the greater good, if the great amount of people did something for the greater good, everybody would benefit for it. And I think that's why Jill Stein most likely won't win. I mean, if I had wood, knock on wood, I hope she does. But I mean, so few people know the good that people would benefit from that it's not going to reach the masses, because the masses aren't just being educated. I know I've been on the air for too long, but thank you for your call, and that's all I really have to say.
All right. It's refreshing hearing from you. Thank you so much for calling in and participating today. Thank you. David, you're on the air from Brooklyn.
Thank you very much, Utrice. You know, as I look at it, this is a time for analysis and conclusions. In other words, the people of the country have to really put on their analysis hat and come to some conclusions. Conclusions like the fact that under a capitalist economic system, you're never going to get freedom, liberty, and justice for all. You're never going to escape racism and the things that make most of the people here poor or near poor. People have to think that they have choices other than a communist system or state capitalism or a predatory capitalist system that is all over the world, that has its tentacles all over, and you're never going to get justice, freedom, and equality here. We need to look at the possibility of having another economic system that benefits all the people that live in the world. So, you know, if you put your chances on a capitalist Republican Party and a capitalist Democrat Party, I mean, that's useless, because they have one goal, and that is to make profit for the few that control it. So people have to get to that conclusion and stop supporting these parties and do other things that would benefit the people that live in the country rather than the oligarchy and ruling elite that run everything.
Well, that immediately begs a question about time. What you're talking about will take a long time. The question is, what do you then say to people who feel that they have to respond to things happening right now? And
well,
to what degree
right now,
can they in any way prevail?
If people want to do something right now, first they have to get to that point where they make their analysis and come to those conclusions, and completely withdraw from the Democrat and Republican Party. And at this point in time, I would say one move would be to work over yourself over to the Green Party and let them have your vote, even though it's going to be a tough road to climb to get a win. I don't know if they're even in every state. But the point is that just doing the same thing over and over again is totally useless. And people have to get to the point where they stop doing these things. Every election, they talk about the better of two evils. That is ridiculous to keep continuing that, and it's got to stop. And I think the time to stop is today. Right now, people have to stop being put into that situation of selecting about one of the two bad candidates that are presented to you.
Well, do you think it is possible, even now in this election cycle, that some portion of what it is you're talking about could work or could be applied with some degree of success?
Yes, I think that would get the attention of the two ruling class parties, Republican, Democrat. It would get their attention, and this may be a point where people start catching on to what's going on. Most people, you know, as I see it, are asleep with their eyes wide open. So doing something like that would get a lot of attention. I know it's hard because the media is an instrument of the capitalist system, and most people aren't skillful enough to interpret even what is really being said. I mean, it's so ridiculous, and it's hard, but this would be a start. This would be a start. I'm not saying it's going to instantly change, but this would be a start.
And I think this conversation is a start. This is where we need to start. We need to start talking. And this helps people to begin to open up to new ideas and the possibility of changing things. But it all starts with a conversation. Thank you so much for your call today,
David.
Thank
you. Thank you for all that you do.
Thank you. Well, this brings us to the end of our program today. The NBC Savings Club is up next. You want to stay tuned for that. You can reach me at leidstories@gmail.com. Let me know what you think about this program. And it's always great to have a conversation because this is peer-to-peer education, and I value this like you would not believe. This is very, very important work to do, to get people talking to each other and talking about the things that matter in their lives. And you may not be aware of it, but sometimes you say things and it causes somebody to pause and rethink or go deeper into the subject. So this is very, very important for us. Thanks a lot. We'll see each other tomorrow. Always a pleasure and a great privilege to be in your company. Bye-bye.